Peace talks between Saudi officials and Iranian-backed Houthi representatives in Yemen after hundreds of thousands killed in a humanitarian catastrophe. Could this be the breakthrough to end years of war? And what would a settlement mean for the region? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Fuliba Thibault. It's been one of the worst conflicts since the Second World War, but negotiations in Yemen are offering hope that lasting peace may be on the horizon. The war has global dimensions, reaching from Tehran to Riyadh, from Abu Dhabi to Washington. But it's the people of Yemen who have lost the most. They're victims of a conflict in one of the world's poorest nations, a war driven by some of the richest. We'll be talking about the prospects for peace with our guests in a few minutes. But first, a look at how we got here with this report from Barbara Angopa.
The rival parties in Yemen's lengthy war, meeting in Sana'a. Mediators from Oman are leading international efforts to broker a ceasefire between Saudi Arabia and Houthi rebels. Ahead of the talks, the group outlined its conditions for peace.
Our just demands are stopping the aggression completely, lifting the blockade completely, paying the salaries of all Yemeni employees from oil and gas revenues, compensation and reconstruction, as well as the exit of foreign forces from Yemen.
The conflict dates back to 2014 when the Houthis, supported by Iran, captured the capital, demanding a new government. A year later, a coalition led by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates backed the internationally recognized government and launched a military campaign against the rebels.
All we want is to be brothers, united with our neighbors, so that they have their interest and we have ours, and we live in peace. We don't want war. War destroys nations.
We hope and ask God that the Saudis and Houthis, that satisfies the Yemen people first, because people are tired of this situation and of promises and procrastination.
The fighting has taken its toll. Hundreds of thousands of people have been killed and millions displaced, creating what the United Nations describes as the world's biggest humanitarian crisis. It estimates that 23 million people urgently need assistance. The most vulnerable are the worst affected. Healthcare workers say millions of children are suffering from acute malnutrition and at risk of illness because they have no access to clean water and sanitation. Attacks on schools have interrupted education. The UN says billions of dollars are needed to provide basic services. The war has also come at a cost for the Saudis and their allies. Houthi drone and missile attacks have targeted oil installations in the kingdom and the United Arab Emirates. Several rounds of peace talks deadlocked until the UN-led negotiations led to a temporary ceasefire last year. It's hoped that current discussions, which come just weeks after Saudi Arabia and Iran agreed to normalize diplomatic relations, will finally bring an end to this long-running conflict. Barbara Angopa, Al Jazeera for Inside Story.
Now, before we begin our discussion, let's take a look at the complicated balance of power in Yemen. The Presidential Leadership Council, which was formed last year, controls most of the south and is backed by Saudi Arabia. It's the internationally recognized government. The Southern Transitional Council forces, supported by the UAE, have a presence in Aden and other parts of the south, with fighters stationed on the island of Socotra. The Saudi-UAE coalition is fighting the Iranian-backed Houthis, who have controlled the capital Sana'a and most of northern Yemen since 2014. And Al-Qaeda is active in several areas, with its biggest influence in the northern Hadramaut province. Well, let's bring in our guest now for today's Inside Story. In Doha is Ibrahim Freyhat, Associate Professor in International Conflict Resolution at the Doha Institute for Graduate Studies and author of Iran and Saudi Arabia, Taming the Chaotic Conflict. In Stockholm is Afra Nasser, non-resident fellow at the Arab Center, Washington, D.C., and a specialist on humanitarian and human rights issues in Yemen. And in Washington, D.C., Trita Parsi, executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, an American think tank. He's also the author of Losing an Enemy, Obama, Iran, and the Triumph of Diplomacy. Thank you all for joining us on Inside Story. It's great to have you with us. Ibrahim, let me start with you. There have been contacts between the warring sides before, but how significant is this latest round of talks in Sana'a? Are you hopeful that there could be a breakthrough to end this conflict?
Thank you for having me. This is not the first time where talks happened between Saudi Arabia and Houthis, and even there were Saudis who visited Sana'a before. But not to this level. I think this is the first time we're seeing high representations on this level from Saudi Arabia, accompanied by Omani mediators. So this is new that we're having, which is a good signal that's given us. Second, this comes right 1 month after the agreement signed between Iran and Saudi Arabia in China with the China mediation. Which we predicted during that time a month ago on this show and inside the story after the signing of the agreement, that the agreement would lead to tension reduction in the region, because the region has seen several proxy wars supported by Iran and Saudi Arabia in Yemen, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq. And the agreement between Iran and Saudi Arabia would reflect itself on the tension reduction in the region. We have seen already a Saudi attempt to invite the Syrian regime to the next Arab League meeting.
Now we have seen this in Yemen. But Ibrahim, do you positive steps, as you say, but do you think it could lead to lasting peace in Yemen?
We know that this is very likely to lead to tension reduction in the region. But I do not think that we should be optimistic that this is going to solve all Yemen problems, because the conflict in Yemen has domestic factors in Yemen. It's not all made by or supported by Iran and Saudi Arabia. There are domestic reasons the Yemenis have to deal with this. But yes, Iran and Saudi Arabia's involvement and the proxy wars that we've seen in the past years has exacerbated the domestic factors between the Yemeni faction themselves. The Houthis refusing power sharing so far. The other Yemeni political parties are excluded from the political process. So
Sorry to interrupt you. We'll talk about the other actors in this conflict in a little while and the complicated aspect of that as well. But let me come to Trita in Washington, D.C. and ask you your thoughts, Trita. Ibrahim says, let's not be over-optimistic. What are your thoughts? Do you think we are on the verge of a breakthrough here in this conflict?
Well, I certainly hope that we are on the verge of breakthrough, but I think the caution that Mr. Ibrahim put forward is very much warranted. At the end of the day, the Yemeni conflict originally was an internal civil war. Unfortunately, both Iran and Saudi Arabia and the UAE exasperated the situation, poured more weapons into the conflict, made it much bloodier. The blockade has killed a majority of the people in the last year, and it's made it worse. If the Iranians and the Saudis pull out, if they no longer compete with each other in Yemen through that civil war, at a minimum, that element will be gone, but it will not automatically resolve the conflict in and of itself. It will remain, tensions will remain, but it will make it easier to resolve it. One other fact that is important to understand here, most civil wars simply cannot drag on for more than a year unless foreign elements get involved. When foreign elements get involved, pour more weapons and resources into the conflict, that's when civil wars tend to go on for years and years and be more sustainable. So the withdrawal of that, those resources and those weapons from Iran and Saudi Arabia and hopefully from the UAE, at a minimum, will dry up some of that energy into that war and hopefully help bring it to an end. But it's not an automatic solution.
All right. Afra, let me come to you. As a Yemeni, how hopeful are you about an eventual end to this conflict?
As a Yemeni, I really have mixed feelings. And also as a researcher, I see mixed indications and conflicting indications that this is positive and might be negative at the same time. So as Yemeni, I would say that I've been getting so many messages from relatives and family members asking me, is this true? Is it true? Like the shake of hands between the Saudi ambassador and the Houthi official al-Mashat, is that true or a fake news? Or and the question is, when will we see that image of shaking hands between the Yemeni officials and Yemeni leaders themselves? Mm-hmm. You know, 8 brutal years of conflict have devastated the lives of millions of civilians in Yemen. The UN once estimated that the conflict had the deaths of nearly 250,000 people, although many Yemen experts believe the death toll to be significantly higher. So that made really people inside Yemen really in disbelief because of the huge scale of death and pain and suffering, not being able to really believe that we are in the road to peace building, right, and peacemaking. So I think, but as a researcher, I'm really, really concerned about having a fragile peace at the expense of lasting and durable peace, which requires more work than what we're seeing today.
All right. Afra, very interesting that you talked about the handshake between the Houthi official and the Saudi representative. And I'm going to come to you now, Ibrahim, and talk about the other actors. As Afra said, what about the Yemenis themselves? And there are other actors involved in this conflict. As we mentioned, the Southern Secessionists, for one. How do they fit into this process? And can you have a settlement to this conflict without involving all these different actors?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we can talk about a serious settlement of this conflict without the involvement of all other parties. And this is where when the problem started, actually. When the government in Yemen, the central government in Yemen, collapsed with the beginning of this war and the Houthi coup against the central government, the Houthis excluded all other parties. So there are, for example, leaders of the Islah party who are still arrested by the Houthis. The Houthis refuse the power-sharing arrangements in order to solve it with other problems. There are also the transitional council, the Hirak in the southern also part of Yemen, that they're not part of any process that we are seeing today. What the current talks that we're seeing between Saudi Arabia and the Houthis, it's between the Saudis and the Houthis, but that's not including the other parties. Even the central government, the Hadi government that used to be in power, today it's marginalized. It's not taking an active role in these negotiations. We are seeing Saudis and Omanis meeting with the Houthis negotiating, while the government, Hadi government, that was in power before the war started, they're not part of these negotiations. So
what about the Emiratis, Ibrahim? What about the Emiratis in all this? I mean, they were part of the Saudi-led coalition, of course, but there seems to be tensions between the Emirati and the Saudis. And the Emiratis, of course, we know, back fighters who are in control of Socotra Island, for example. Are the Emiratis on board with this process?
Well, the Emiratis, they're supporting a militia in the south that is funded by the Emiratis and supported by them, and it's not part of any political talks. And they have their own security, their own territories that they're in control of this. So, no, that's another challenge, actually, where even if it's solved between Saudi Arabia and the Houthis, you still need to talk to the Emiratis and their militias. You still need to talk to the other political parties, Islah and the Ba'athist and the other ones. And you need also to talk to the Hirak in the southern part of Yemen, which are all excluded from any talks, let alone, of course, Al-Qaeda. That's against everyone. That's not part of any talks and represents a major security threat to the entire Yemen.
Trita, your thoughts about this, the fact that you have various actors here, which makes peace complicated, right, which makes reaching peace complicated, especially when also you have divisions within the so-called Saudi-led coalition. How do you see that evolving? And what do you think the calculus is in Riyadh and Tehran right now? What's motivating this reconciliation, first of all, between Riyadh and Tehran, and also Saudi Arabia's desire to end its involvement in Yemen?
So on the first question of the reconciliation inside the country, again, it's really important to recognize that this is unfortunately not the end of the conflict. It hopefully will be the end of the armed conflict, at least the one that is fueled by Saudi Arabia and Iran. But it is not an end of the conflict itself. It's going to be a very bumpy road to be able to get to a full reconciliation. But this is a first necessary step towards being able to start that process. In regards to Iran and Saudi Arabia, I think from the Saudi perspective, it's quite clear. Saudi Arabia recognizes that this was a huge mistake. They cannot win this, that they have fought the Houthis, the Iranians, and only made Saudi security worse. And in order to achieve the 2030 vision that the Saudi Crown Prince has, he needs to reconcile with Iran, however much he may dislike the Iranians and the Iranian regime. And it's in many ways a bold step for him to now make this shift. From the Iranian perspective, the Saudis have been tremendously problematic, both because of oil policies, but also because of the Iranian perception that Iran International TV station, which is a completely Saudi-funded TV station, is a major force behind the protests in Iran that has fueled instability in their view. And as a result, the Saudis and the Iranians both prove to each other they can really hurt each other. But the value of that pain that they can inflict on the other side is now essentially diminishing. And then as a result, they've opted to turn this direction and make peace and reconcile. And again, I want to also emphasize, even though the Iraqis and the Omanis played a crucial role in laying the groundwork for this, I think the Chinese were absolutely instrumental to get this deal because of the fact that neither the Saudis nor the Iranians trust the other side. And neither the Iraqis nor the Omanis could provide any type of a mechanism that would guarantee the behavior and the adherence to any agreement.
Were the Chinese directly involved in Yemen? Were they directly involved in this Yemen process?
I'm not talking about Yemen. I'm talking about the reconciliation between the Iranians and the Saudis. Okay. The Chinese had economic leverage on both sides, and as a result, could ensure or at least provide some sort of assurance that they both will adhere to the agreement. And that agreement, as has been said on this show, seems to also have been instrumental in order to be able to get this extension of the truce that we're seeing in Yemen right now.
All right. Let me come to you now, Afra. As we've said, it's a very complicated process, isn't it, given the different actors, whether external or internal, involved. Looking at some of the demands the Houthis have made, for foreign forces to leave Yemen, for example, salaries to be paid and so on. Talk to us about the daily hardships Yemenis are experiencing right now and what an end to the conflict would mean in the immediate for them. Are there any signs already on the ground that things are getting better?
So under the 8 brutal years of conflict, there have been a wide range of human rights violations, violation of international humanitarian law, the unlawful, indiscriminate and disproportionate attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructures, which really resulted in deepening the humanitarian crisis and the humanitarian situation on the ground, where, with no exaggeration, every household in Yemen is struggling economically because of the consequences of the conflict and the abuses by the warring parties. But I think it's very important to say here that in Yemen today, there are so many warring parties, not only the Saudi-led coalition and the Houthi armed group. So the question is, when will we see peace talks between the other warring parties? And at this stage, it's so important to call on the Houthi armed group and the Saudi Arabia and the UAE, by the way, to ensure reparation for civilian harm in Yemen that happened during, their fighting. So just
reparation and accountability, I imagine.
Exactly. Just because they are shaking hands today doesn't mean that there are millions of civilians that paid the price for their conflict. So I truly believe this is the top priority at this moment in the road forward that millions of civilians in Yemen are calling for. And when we come to, you know, in the next stages, when the other warring parties make peace, we will continue to call on those calls of reparation and accountability and justice.
Right. Afar, let me just ask you.
Just last point. I think it's so important not to repeat the same mistake of what happened right after the Yemen's uprising in 2011, where there was no transitional justice whatsoever. So now transitioning Yemen from war to so-called lasting peace without justice will just eventually trigger other conflicts.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, Afra, you know, what one phrase that we've heard recently a lot is that Yemenis must work out a peace deal themselves. Are the conditions on the ground right for that to happen? And how do you make that happen, given that even before 2011, there were tensions already, there was a war and so on? How do Yemenis work out a peace deal themselves?
But absolutely, like, it should be a Yemeni decision by Yemenis themselves. But the question now, where is the Yemeni government in this talks between the Houthis and Saudi Arabia? They seem to be not in presence. They were not part of the mediation in Oman. So this is a failure to the concept that this should be a Yemeni decision. And this is one of the indications why this is not going to be a lasting peace.
All right, Ibrahim, let me come to you about that. It does look like the Houthis are in a stronger position today, even in these negotiations and talks with the Saudis. It seems like the Saudis are coming around more to the Houthis' demands, than vice versa.
Yeah, I think the Houthis will be emboldened with this peace talks, and especially if it's successful, because I think what the Houthis have to give back to to Saudi Arabia is security. But for that, the Houthis will be in charge, because we are not discussing power arrangements if the war stops and after lifting the blockade. Whether the Houthis will be open to power sharing, it doesn't look like it. It doesn't seem so. There are no indicators to suggest that power sharing arrangement is possible. And also, the Houthis fought all this long, and they had this all years of fighting. Not that they're just going to give it to their rivals, to the Islah Party. They are going, if the war ends there with Saudi Arabia, they are going to sustain and reinforce their monopoly of power in Sana'a and other parts of Yemen where they're in control of it. Now,
Are you saying that we're not likely to see a centralized power-sharing government in Sana'a between the Houthis and the government?
Well, if these peace talks succeed in reaching an agreement between the Houthis and the Saudis, then peace in Yemen becomes even more difficult. If this agreement excludes all other Yemeni parties, especially who were in power in the transitional process before the war started, and those who were in as part of the political process in the national dialogue process that started right in 2011 after the Yemeni revolutions. If these parties, and it seems they are excluded, the Yemeni government, they don't have a seat on the table. The other political parties, they don't have a seat in these negotiations. So if this agreement is reached, excluding them, it will be left between the Houthis, who are the most powerful, and the other political parties who are much less powerful than the Houthis. Then there is no incentive left for the Houthis to engage in serious national dialogue and power sharing in the post-agreement if this agreement is reached.
Okay, Traitor, let me come to you and ask you, where are the Americans in all this? They provided support to the Saudi-led coalition, providing arms in the beginning of the war, even if President Biden, it seems, somewhat tried to withdraw some of its backing to the Saudi war effort. Where does this leave Washington? And can the U.S. still play a role in bringing the war to Yemen to an end?
Well, first of all, the U.S. seized what it called offensive weapons. It didn't cease sending other weapons to the Saudis. So the president's promise was a rather hollow one. He promised to end the war back in February 2021. It seems as if the Chinese may have played a bigger role in ending this war than the United States has. The United States' approach to this has been to support the Saudis rather than to support a peace process. Now, there are arguments on the American side that behind the scenes, the U.S. side have been putting more pressure on Saudi Arabia than necessarily has been reported. That may be true, but I think we have come to a realization in the region that when you want to end conflicts and peacemaking, the natural address for such an effort is no longer Washington. It may be elsewhere.
Interesting, indeed, these changing dynamics in the region. Afrat, let me come to you and ask you, you know, a final question. As a Yemeni, of course, you've researched the human rights situation in the country, the humanitarian situation as well. But as a Yemeni, what are your hopes today for your country? And what would a final settlement, what would you like a final settlement to look like to bring about peace to Yemen?
Look, last year at this time, I was on Inside Story talking about three horrific attacks on civilians in Saada, Hudaydah, and Sana'a, and even in some... By the Saudi-led coalition. And in Saada, some of the detainees in the attacked place, they were gunned down by the Houthi forces there. So this is just to tell you that we've come a long way. Like Yemen has been tortured by this conflict. But as a Yemeni, I really hope to end this conflict once and for all and not to repeat it again. And that requires a lot of work and addressing the hard topics, justice questions, justice concerns, so we don't end up in another circle of this vicious cycle of violence in Yemen.
Afra, thank you very much. Thank you for that. Afra. Nasser, Ibrahim Frehat, Trita Parsi, thank you all very much for joining us on this edition of Inside Story. And thank you for watching. You can always watch this program again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And of course, you can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is at AJInsideStory. From me, Fulibat Thibault, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye for now.